Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We are up to Book 12, Chapter 7. The dreadful news of the Battle of Borodino, of our losses in killed and wounded, and the still more terrible news of the loss of Moscow reached Varennes in the middle of September. Princess Mary, having learnt of her brother's wound only from the Gazette and having no definite news of him, prepared, so Nicholas heard, he had not seen her again himself, to set off in search of Prince Andrew. When he received the news of the Battle of Borodino and the abandonment of Moscow, Rostov was not seized with despair, anger, and desire for vengeance, or any feeling of that kind, but everything in Varennes suddenly seemed to him dull and tiresome, and he experienced an indefinite feeling of shame and awkwardness. The conversations he heard seemed to him insincere. He did not know how to judge all these affairs, and felt that only in the regiment would everything again become clear to him. He made haste to finish buying the horses, and often became unreasonably angry with his servant and squadron quartermaster. A few days before his departure, a special thanksgiving, at which Nicholas was present, was held in the cathedral for the Russian victory. He stood a little behind the governor and held himself with military decorum through the service, meditating on a great variety of subjects. When the service was over, the governor's wife beckoned him to her. "Have you seen the princess?" she asked, indicating with a movement of her head a lady standing on the opposite side beyond the choir. Nicholas immediately recognized Princess Mary, not so much by the profile he saw under her bonnet as by the feeling of solicitude, timidity, and pity that immediately overcame him. Princess Mary, evidently engrossed by her thoughts, was crossing herself for the last time before leaving the church. Nicholas looked at her face with surprise. It was the same face he had seen before. There was the same general expression of refined inner spiritual labour, but now it was quite differently lit up. There was a pathetic expression of sorrow, prayer, and hope in it. As had occurred before when she was present, Nicholas went up to her without waiting to be prompted by the governor's wife, and not asking himself whether or not it was right and proper to address her here in church, and told her he had heard of her trouble and sympathized with his whole soul. As soon as she heard his voice, a vivid glow rekindled in her face, lighting up both her sorrow and her joy. "This is one thing I wanted to tell you, Princess," said Rostov. "It is that if your brother, Prince Andrew Nikolaevich, were not living, it would have been at once announced in the Gazette, as he is a colonel." The princess looked at him, not grasping what he was saying, but cheered by the expression of regretful sympathy on his face. "And I have known so many cases of a splinter wound. The Gazette said it was a shell, either proving fatal at once or being very slight," continued Nicholas. "We must hope for the best, and I am sure..." Princess Mary interrupted him. "Oh, that would be so dread," she began, and prevented by agitation from finishing, she bent her head with a movement as graceful as everything she did in his presence, and looking up at him gratefully, went out following her aunt. That evening Nicholas did not go out, but stayed at home to settle some accounts with his horse dealers. When he had finished that business, it was already too late to go anywhere, but still too early to go to bed. And for a long time he paced up and down the room, reflecting on his life, a thing he rarely did. Princess Mary had made an agreeable impression on him when he had met her in the Smolensk province. His having encountered her in such exceptional circumstances, and his mother having at one time mentioned her to him as a good match, had drawn his particular attention to her. When he met her again in Varennes, the impression she made on him was not merely pleasing, but powerful. Nicholas had been struck by the peculiar moral beauty he observed in her at this time. He was now, however, preparing to go away, and it had not entered his head to regret that he was thus depriving himself of chances of meeting her. But that day's encounter in church had, he felt, sunk deeper than was desirable for his peace of mind. That pale, sad, refined face, that radiant look, those gentle, graceful gestures, and especially the deep and tender sorrow expressed in all her features, agitated him and evoked his sympathy. In men, Rostov could not bear to see the expression of a higher spiritual life. That was why he did not like Prince Andrew, and he referred to it contemptuously as philosophy and dreaminess. But in Princess Mary, that very sorrow which revealed the depth of a whole spiritual world, foreign to him, was an irresistible attraction. She must be a wonderful woman, a real angel, he said to himself. Why am I not free? Why was I in such a hurry with Sonya? And he involuntarily compared the two, the lack of spirituality in the one and the abundance of it in the other. A spirituality he lacked himself, and therefore valued most highly. He tried to picture what would happen were he free, how he would propose to her, and how she would become his wife. But now he could not imagine that. He felt awed, and no clear picture presented itself to his mind. He had long ago pictured himself a future with Sonya, and that was all clear and simple, just because it had all been thought out, and he knew all there was in Sonya. But it was impossible to picture a future with Princess Mary, because he did not understand her, but simply loved her. Reveries about Sonya had something merry and playful in them, but to dream of Princess Mary was always difficult, and a little frightening. How she prayed, he thought. It was plain that her whole soul was in her prayer. Yes, that was a prayer that moves mountains, and I am sure her prayer will be answered. Why don't I pray for what I want? He suddenly thought. What do I want? To be free, released from Sonya. She was right, he thought, remembering what the governor's wife had said. Nothing but misfortune can come of marrying Sonya. Muddles, grief for Mama, business difficulties, muddles, terrible muddles. Besides, I don't love her, not as I should. Oh, God, release me from this dreadful, inextricable position. He suddenly began to pray. Yes, prayer can move mountains, but one must have faith and not pray as Natasha and I used to as children, that the snow might turn into sugar, and then run out into the yard to see whether it had done so. No, but I am not praying for trifles now. He thought as he put his pipe down in a corner and, folding his hands, placed himself before the icon. Softened by memories of Princess Mary, he began to pray as he had not done for a long time. Tears were in his eyes and in his throat when the door opened and Lavrushka came in with some papers. Blockhead, why do you come in without being called? Cried Nicholas, quickly changing his attitude. From the governor, said Lavrushka in a sleepy voice, a courier has arrived and there's a letter for you. Well, all right, thanks, you can go. Nicholas took the two letters, one of which was from his mother and the other from Sonya. He recognized them by the handwriting and opened Sonya's first. He had only read a few lines when he turned pale and his eyes opened wide with fear and joy. No, it's not possible, he cried aloud. Unable to sit still, he paced up and down the room, holding the letter and reading it. He glanced through it, then read it again, and then again, and standing still in the middle of the room, he raised his shoulders, stretching out his hands with his mouth wide open and his eyes fixed. What he had just been praying for with confidence that God would hear him had come to pass, but Nicholas was as much astonished as if it were something extraordinary and unexpected, and as if the very fact that it had happened so quickly proved that it had not come from God to whom he had prayed, but by some ordinary coincidence. This unexpected and, as it seemed to Nicholas, quite voluntary letter from Sonya freed him from the knot that fettered him, from which there had seemed no escape. She wrote that the last unfortunate events, the loss of almost the whole of the Rostovs' Moscow property, and the Countess's repeatedly expressed wish that Nicholas should marry Princess Bolkonskaya, together with his silence and coldness of late, had all combined to make her decide to release him from his promise and set him completely free. It would be too painful to me to think that I might be a cause of sorrow or discord in the family that has been so good to me, she wrote. And my love has no aim but the happiness of those I love. So, Nicholas, I beg you to consider yourself free, and to be assured that in spite of everything no one can love you more than does your Sonia. Both letters were written from Troitsa. The other from the Countess described their last days in Moscow, their departure, the fire, and the destruction of all their property. In this letter the Countess also mentioned that Prince Andrew was among the wounded travelling with them. His state was very critical, but the doctor said there was now more the hope. Sonia and Natasha were nursing him. Next day Nicholas took his mother's letter and went to see Princess Mary. Neither he nor she said a word about what Natasha's nursing him might mean, but thanks to this letter Nicholas suddenly became almost as intimate with the princess as if they were relations. The following day he saw Princess Mary off on her journey to Yaroslavl, and a few days later left to rejoin his regiment. All right, there we go, another chapter down, and look at that. Things are moving forward quite quickly for Nikolai and Maya. That was a funny little scene. He kneels down to say his prayers, and as he finishes them, a letter comes giving him exactly what he prayed for. I like that he wrote that off as coincidence. I thought he was going to become a religious zealot over that, taking it as gospel proof that prayers are answered. But I like that he went, nah, that was too quick. Must be a coincidence. It also explained this chapter why he doesn't like Andre. De Fleury said, so that's why they don't like Andrew. He's too sensitive and philosophical and idealistic and girly. He doesn't run around grunting and waving his spear enough. SMH, which I think means shaking my head. What the F, Sonia? Bad timing if that was a bluff. Dreamy or not, am I the only one thinking Andrew is going to turn into his own terrifying father and eat little Nicholas alive when he finds him chasing his sister's money? Be a dragon, Andrew. I'm not sure what that means. Most importantly, why hasn't anyone sent that witch, Boreen, on her way already? Who's in charge here? Quite interesting there. Dreamy or not, am I the only one thinking Andrew is going to turn into his own terrifying father and eat little Nicholas alive when he finds him chasing his sister's money? You know, I don't think he will. Will he? I don't think Nicholas is chasing his sister's money, really. Nicholas comes from a pretty respectable family, although they did go broke. He comes from the same family as Andrew's love interest. So we can't really begrudge them on that front. But it is a bit of a race, isn't it? Because if Andrew and Natasha get married, Nicholas and Mary can't get married because two siblings can't marry two other siblings or something like that. It's some rule that they had. So the only reason why they are now able to get together, Nicholas and Mary, is because Natasha and Andrew broke up, which is why it had that little bit in this chapter of them saying they were ignoring that one bit about Natasha nursing Andrew back to health, and they didn't want to question what that might mean. They didn't want to think about whether or not they were getting back together, because that would be a big old spanner in their works. So, we're going to end up with this weird situation, aren't we? Not quite a love triangle, but only two of these couples can work out, Andrew and Natasha or Nicholas and Mary. Which one of those two couples, if you had to choose only one of them to work out, would you want? I think Andrew and Natasha are going to get together. This is my prediction. Ruining Nicholas and Mary's thing. They'll have to call that off because of this weird siblings rule. But then Andrew will die of his infection, meaning that Nicholas and Maria can get together. And it'll be a bittersweet thing. Is that my prediction? That's a prediction. Let's just say that. I could see that happening. Wiggity Whack said, yeah, I have to say, I don't really get the relationship dynamic between Boreen and Mary. Why is she still around? DeFleury said, I've decided it is so she can get married to Dolokhov. I think Boreen, it's a bit like, almost like how Sonya's still around. She's sort of just like part of that family, part of that household. They've taken her in as part of, She's not family, but it's her home. She's been taken as part of that home. And I just saw that with Boreen. She was sort of a loyal companion to old man Bolkonski. And after he died, they kind of honor that loyalty by she's still sort of part of the household. That's the impression I got. I don't actually know how these things work, but it seems that way. There's been a few examples of sort of like people just adapt into a household. They have a role to fill, and that's just where they live now. Someone else might be able to correct me on that if I'm off the mark. Okay, I'm going to leave it there for this chapter. That was a pretty fun little chapter. Thank you very much for listening. Please do check out the Patreon page if you haven't already. Today, I'll give you my sob story for the day. Today was the AFL Grand Final, very big in my state of Victoria in Australia. But I'm not into the footy, so I thought I'll go out and do some Uber driving. I do that occasionally. Drove around, just didn't have much luck with the Uber today. You know, when if anyone out there drives Uber, even on a busy day, sometimes you can just choose bad trips. You know, people want to muck around, people aren't ready to go, you're just wasting time. Anyway, after a long day of driving, I'd only made about $150. Minus all your fuel and everything like that. It's really not worth your time. You're making a lot less than minimum wage. Anyway, I was disappointed. I was like, oh, I should get some food. I'm starving. I've earned at least a little fast food. I was like, should I go to McDonald's? No, you know what? I'm going to spend that extra couple of dollars and get some real food. So I went to this little Chinese restaurant in Box Hill. Anyone from Victoria will know Box Hill's the best place for Chinese food. Spent my $12 on my combination noodle soup. Real noodles, real meat, real vegetables, real ingredients. You know, it's worth it. Worth the extra money. And then I went back to my car and I had copped an $81 parking fine for parking in a nearly empty street about 5 minutes before it was free parking. Anyway, all up, I think I pretty much broke even on a whole day of driving around. So that's my sob story, and that's why I'm urging you on this particular episode to make my day by doing a Patreon pledge, because God knows Uber driving is not worth it. Sob story over. All right, thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.